I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
I'm one of HRN's interns, Nina Medvinskaya, with a preview of the next episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. This week's topic? The marriage of food and danger. Sometimes, danger lurks in the food that we eat.
So instead of saying what is poisonous, I'd rather say what's not, because it's literally just the flesh and the fins.
Food poisoning doesn't just threaten our bodies, but it endangers our environment as well.
The emissions of JBS, combined with the other top five meat companies, exceed the annual emissions of Exxon, Shell, or BP.
For more, tune into this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. Today we sit down with Zach and Marley of Lamora Pizzeria. The pair met in New York, decamped for Charleston, South Carolina, where they built their own mobile pizza oven, and now they are in LA doing pop-ups for pizza lovers all over the city. Then we were at Danger Bird Records Studios in Silver Lake with Dev Ray talking about his solo project and talking about why he thought I'm So Excited by the Pointer Sisters was the perfect classic to cover. Sit back, relax, happy new year. Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are here with Marley Blajet.
Yep.
And Zach Swemley.
Nailed it.
And Barkley the dog.
Barkley the dog too.
Was there a number?
No.
One? Oh, okay.
T-O-O.
Oh, okay. Co-founders of Lamora Pizza. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
I always love sitting down with ex-New Yorkers in LA, and I've realized now that if I don't put on the recorder, we can just gossip about New York for forever. But would you ever think, living in New York so long, that LA would become the pizza town it has become?
Not at all, especially in the last, I feel like even since we've arrived, pizza has just become more popular here, whether it's...
When did you arrive?
A year and a half ago.
Yeah.
It just seems like it's more talked about. Not that we specifically brought anything or anyone else wasn't already here. It seems like it's talked about now.
We happened to move, I think, at the right time, and there's a little bit of a pizza wave going on.
Ooh, a real crusty pizza wave. Well, before we talk about Lamora Pizza and you coming out here, I want to go back a while bit. Marley, you grew up in pizza royalty. Your dad worked at CPK.
Yes.
For 20 years?
Yeah.
Where did you grow up, and what was your favorite pie?
I grew up in South Florida, so he was the director of operations for all the stores in that region. But we came out to LA often. But my favorite pie, perhaps, was maybe just the classic barbecue chicken with ranch.
I mean, barbecue chicken. My brother and I worked at a place called Piece of Pizza, RIP, and they did a barbecue chicken pizza.
Yeah.
And I think unless you grew up with it, like, I think if you had it later in life, it's probably something that you might crinkle your nose at. But
yeah,
growing up with it.
I think Zach grew up in Minneapolis, so I think maybe you had one at the Mall of America there, but it wasn't, like, he grew up going to a lot of independent little mom-and-pop restaurants, and my experience of eating as a child was, like, so many chains. But I always try to break down the tiers of chains for him, and I'm like, CPK was at the top. Like, you can't compare it to Ruby Tuesdays or this and that.
I think CPK still sits at the top for some people.
Yeah, I think they sold and a lot changed, and of course, you know, with growth and this and that comes a lot of different things. But I think for a while, a lot of people are like, that was my mom and I's, you know, every Saturday would go to the mall and have a chopped salad and a barbecue chicken pizza.
Now, Zach, your entry into pizza was a little bit more artisanal, because you sort of, like when you were in San Francisco and you were cooking, you were working at
Pizzeria Delfino, which is one of the like
yeah.
legendary pizza places.
Exactly. Yeah.
What brought you into the dough world?
Honestly, I don't know. It was a lack of another job.
Yeah.
I heard good things from a friend in New York. I moved New York, San Francisco, back to New York, and he sent me to Delfina, and I think I walked into the wrong Delfina, and it was Pizzeria Delfina. Same company, but and then that's I started making pizza, and there was that was it.
I mean, I've talked with a lot of bakers and a pizzaiolas, and once you get bit by that pizza bug and trying to get the perfect dough and the perfect alchemy of meat, sauce, topping, like that, it never goes away.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. And I think Delfina does it so well that I've kind of just adopted a lot of what I learned there, which made it a little easier for me currently with Lamora. Obviously different ovens, different dough, different everything, but Delfina had the alchemy, so they taught it all.
So what were those early days, and give me a year of pizza life, because I feel pizza, and I'll say with Roberta's, sort of had in the last 10, 15 years has really become like this like pop culture zeitgeist. But what was pizza like back when you were starting to make it and things like that?
I don't know that it was really a thing. I knew of Una Pizza Napolitana
because sure.
I moved from New York to San Francisco. But I didn't think about it really.
As
yeah, I don't know.
The whole, you know, subculture of all these different styles, and I just feel like it's taken so much more seriously than it once.
Yeah, pizza to me growing up was like whenever we got to go from Philly to New York, I was like, we're gonna get a slice of pizza, and then if not, it was, you know, our local pizza shop or Domino's or something like that. Now it's you can open up a 3-star pizza restaurant.
Right.
Right. Yeah, yeah. There wasn't that when I started at Delfina. As far as I knew, I was also, like I said, I didn't mean to go there, so I was kind of chasing a different wave of cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know about the pizza craze, but it's a thing. I don't know.
So how were those early days like? Like, what were you learning? How did you get into pizza? What were those first couple of pies? Success, failures?
I think it was success. I was told by a chef, I took a short-term job, I'm not going to say any names, but he was like, don't go to Pizzeria Delfina, it's just a bunch of pirates there. And like, just talking about the cooks, like they're not real cooks, it's
right.
like skaters and whatever. And I don't know, all the guys I met there are still cooking. A lot of them still make pizza, like...
Is that guy? Is the guy told you not to go no longer in the biz?
He's still in the biz.
Oh. So what eventually brought you back to New York and you to New York? Did you go straight from Florida to New York?
Yes, I did. Zach did New York, San Francisco, and then New York. We met on his second term in New York and then have been all over since. But that... You just were ready to leave San Francisco again.
Ready to leave,
go back
to
the East Coast.
I was going
to
approach a different culinary thing and butchering, and I got to New York, and again, I won't say any names, but somehow that fell through when I landed in New York.
Hmm.
But
and you both met at Mission Cantina.
Yep.
Yeah.
Short-lived.
Yeah.
I loved it. I mean, I liked it when it opened up. I liked those burritos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good right when it opened.
I mean, that was... I remember, and again, not to... Gossip New York. When that opened, that was like, oh, here we go. Like,
yeah.
Here's a new wave of restaurants. Like, here's a new scene. What was it like working there? How did you guys two meet? Like, what was the early story of you guys?
You wanna take that one?
Yeah. That was my... So I grew up in the restaurant industry, but since was just going to school in New York and working in retail a little bit. And so I lived on Orchard Street, and I had always contemplated getting back into... the restaurant side of the business, just because it's so much of what I knew. And then I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go check out this Mission Cantina and apply. And I think Zach and I in our
I think Danny bought jeans from you a few times.
Oh yes,
too.
Danny was my client at Acme, so okay. he'd come by his kitchen uniform, spent lots of money on clothes with me. And
your classic Acme jeans is a kitchen uniform.
Of course,
yeah,
of course.
Perfect.
If it's a story, I've heard a million times.
Anyway, from there I started working at Mission. I think Zach and I realized in our opening, we were having like a little meet and greet with the employees. And I guess they asked what our favorite restaurant was, and Zach and I both said Frankie's Spuntino in Brooklyn.
Shout out to
the Frankies. Yeah. Shout out to the Franks. And then from there, it was history.
Well, it took a year of being there.
Yes, and then it took a year of working there and some other things going down, but one of our first conversations was about pizza and just how much we both had a love for it, which is ironic where we ended up now. The idea for La Mora was something just kind of, I mean, people always think we conceived it prior to moving to Charleston, which we didn't get to that yet, but it was kind of a distant thing. It was just this shared love of pizza that we both had. And
I mean, Michigantina was near one of my Rosario's. My favorite slice.
On the corner there?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, but that's what I think of.
They do the cheeseburger slice.
They do the cheeseburger slice. They do some wild stuff. Sort of CPK-ish.
Yeah, CPK had a cheeseburger pizza.
Yeah. But when did you guys, because I know that you went to go cook at another restaurant. You both sort of went your separate ways as far as restaurant go. But when did you start to feel that to make the next step or to make your own pizza company real, you had to get out of New York? Did New York factor into it and then you go like, we can't do it here?
No, actually. Our move had really nothing to do with opening our own business at the time. It was more of just a...
Yeah, La Mora wasn't even a thought at that point.
Yeah, we just decided we were ready to leave New York.
It happens.
Yeah.
And when that bug gets into your brain of like, I gotta get out of the city, you just gotta go.
Yeah.
Because I know people who have had that bug and then stayed for three or four years.
Or longer.
Yeah. That have been there 5 years saying it. So.
But what drew you to Charleston? What brought you down south?
We
went to Italy for 2 months with no plan. We packed everything and drove it to the Midwest and put it in my mom's attic. And then we had nowhere to go when we got back from Italy. So
yeah,
it was like,
we were like, maybe traveling will give us some clarity. Because I think that's the biggest issue. Everybody knows they want to leave New York. And then they're like, where the hell do we go from here?
Yeah. I mean, it was easy to have an anchor when I left in LA. But it's just like, when you leave, you go, I want something but different. I don't want to go to like New York light, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and that's for us. We were like ruling out LA and San Francisco. Like, we didn't want to go straight to another big city. Mm-hmm. So we were like, where do we find kind of this happy medium? Instead, we picked maybe one of the smallest cities in the country we didn't run the population before we decided to make the move. But anyway, it was totally accidental. Zach had been there for a wine and food festival years prior. I'd been for a wedding weekend. And we just said, let's go. If we find a house or, you know, if we get good vibes in 48 hours, we'll do it.
We signed a lease on a 48-hour visit.
They went, guys. Now, before we go to the break, I want to touch on Italy a little bit. Is that where your pizza plans sort of cemented? Because there's no better place to eat Neapolitan pizza than all over Italy.
I think that this pizza plan was never even... Like, yes, we always talked about pizza.
Am I giving too much credit to the pizza plan before the pizza plan happened?
Yeah, like she said, we talked about pizza the first time we ever went out for drinks. So I think it was just like, Italy helped. I mean, we ran with Don Michele in boxes to our train because we weren't sure if we, like, pizza was a thing,
like
in Italy.
We loved pizza then. Yeah, we ate at 5 pizza places in like 2 days. But, still hadn't conceptualized, like maybe in the distant future, but never the plan for a mobile oven or never anything like that. Just a lot of eating and drinking.
One of the best places in the world to do it. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk about your move to Charleston, the opening of a pizza place in arguably not a pizza city, and then your eventual move to LA. We're here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. Here's a song from the archives. We'll be right back.
Permanent vacation. nowadays you don't see. You just stare at the ceiling, and all the cracks run this way and that way. Make you remember when you stare at them together. And you said you never wanna fall in love again, and your life is only about surviving. One in this tragedy and onwards to the next, and happiness is just an accident.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm here with Zach and Marley of Lamora Pizza. So, leave New York, go to Italy, throw a dart on a map of Charleston, sign a lease. And you are in Charleston, obviously, with a background in working in restaurants and things like that. How long did it take for you to decide that you want to start your own thing? Was that always the idea, or did you start in restaurants and then start to build out your own restaurant?
Kind of both. It was kind of like when we got there and started looking for jobs, we kind of realized maybe it was time to start figuring out what we wanted to do ourselves. But we both also went and found jobs because you can't spend 2 months in Italy and then move to a different city and not have money.
No.
Not have an income.
And not when you have to put down first month, last month's security deposit.
Yeah.
Right. And it was a good way to kind of get introduced to, you know, a city. We came from New York where you get to a point there where you can't go out to dinner without knowing someone that works there, running into someone, and we're in this new city. Like, okay, we have no idea. We didn't know anyone. So it was a good way to kind of get
ingratiated to the city.
Exactly.
Yeah. What was the pizza scene like in Charleston?
Non-existent.
Yeah,
truly non-existent when we first moved there. I mean, I can't even think of... I don't think we even ate pizza before we started cooking.
I can't think of anywhere.
There. No. Yeah. So, they had like a couple old haunts that if you asked people, you know, maybe they would tell you about. But otherwise, it was kind of a very lacking thing there, which also led to our decision to do that. I think more so we just kind of, shortly after getting there, we learned, I think, that this wasn't going to be a long-term destination for us, like somewhere we wanted to lay roots.
Sure.
So it became, you know, like, how do we get the most out of this and enjoy it for a good year to 2 years? And then be able to graduate from there.
So when did the idea of Lamora Pizza, how did it get born? Because there's always the couple bottles of wine, like, oh, yeah, maybe we'll do this.
But, I don't know if we'd been drinking that night, but we were laying in bed. It was like right before, you know, you like put your phone away. If you go on your phone in bed, I know a lot of couples rule that out nowadays, yeah, but and roll over and are like, okay, good night. Zach was like, what if I just built an oven? Literally, that's how it came about. And I think I was like, what? And kind of gave him a weird look.
It was kind of a no look.
And rolled back over and went to bed.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, I mean, let me know if I'm correct in saying this, but I think it was more of like, okay, Zach, he's in the city. He wants to start cooking pizza. And a lot of people do. And that's why, you know, companies are coming out with all these electric ovens that get really hot to make pizza at home, because you want to start cooking, but you don't have the means. And so much about it is the oven. So Zach was just like, you know, what if I just build an oven and I just start making pizza on it?
I mean, how much experience did you have building a pizza oven?
Zero.
Zero?
Yeah.
How does one get... Because you already had the experience of cooking and working in restaurants and... you know, your knowledge of both fine dining pizza and CPK, which is also fine dining in its own right.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's different than building a pizza oven that's going to actually be safe, retain heat, be able to use day in, day out, things like that. How does one go about doing that?
I think after that initial conversation, I told my dad the next day. And within a few days, he had emailed me plans for pizza ovens and thoughts and ideas.
Just feeding the fire.
Yeah, feeding the fire.
Are you a handyman in general?
Yeah, okay. I can build whatever, I guess. But
when I saw him build the oven, I was like, okay, we need a bookshelf. We need this. It's like, all right.
You've been holding out on me. Yeah. So how long did it take to build the oven, and then from building the oven, sort of making it like a real business? Because it's one thing to build the oven, it's another thing to know how to make pizza, but to actually be like, we're going to make food that we're going to sell to people. What was the process and time of that?
We dove right in.
Yeah, I think that's where I came in, maybe. I was like, okay, I've thought about this for a minute, and what if we, you know, did it like this? And then from there, it was just a constant conversation of how do we... We didn't want to be a food truck, per se. And just the idea of what Zach wanted to build, it was literally like an oven on wheels. It wasn't like this, you know, full food facility on a truck or anything. So we kind of knew that that wasn't going to be our game. So it was more so like, how can we collaborate with other businesses and, you know, get them to want to host us, you know, so we can bring them a following and bring people who are going to, you know, buy more of their food or their wine and beer. And then while we can still successfully sell our pizza and, you know, without having a brick and mortar location. And
that said, we dove right in.
We
went full time into Lamora as soon as it was built.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, we both.
With the jobs, everything, all in.
I was already done I already quit to finish building it.
Yeah.
So I think we knew we were just going to go for it.
Yeah, I think I worked for a little bit. I was working at The Ordinary there and everybody was so sick of hearing me. They're all like, what does your boyfriend do again? Remind me. I'm like, oh, he's at home building
just
a pizza.
Hang out with the dog and build
hanging out with the pizza.
They thought we were completely insane.
And so what was that first event like? How did you get the word out? What did people come?
A few people came. Yeah, there was like
there was a marathon. We were at a brewery in the middle of North
Charleston.
And there happened to be a marathon ending when we set up. So
yeah, some sort of...
Our first event was busy.
Carbo load. But then what about the second and third? Because it's always, you know, like the first event, like, hey, my friends are coming, hey, my family's coming. But what was that...
Oh, we had no friends or family, so that wasn't even an option.
But what was that sort of slow, steady journey to it becoming, I don't want to say a real thing, but being like, oh, like, this is actually going to work?
Yeah.
I mean, it was finding our identity for sure. There was, like, breweries. We were doing anything we could because we didn't have other jobs.
Right.
Where breweries and things like that weren't things we wanted to do. Initially, we never thought, like, oh, we're going to do pop or go to breweries and be a food truck. But
sure. It's a natural thing. You know, a lot of breweries don't have food. They don't have full kitchens and people are drinking and hungry. So, you know, we had the opportunity to get into a couple of places with that. You know, and then we learned from there. We're like, maybe this isn't our clientele entirely. So there was a couple we kept in our repertoire, but honestly, we were just really greeted with open arms from the entire Charleston market. Like, I think that people were very eager to have pizza and have people doing something a little bit different and
have good pizza.
To have good pizza, yeah. Maybe it wasn't good on day one and two, but...
remember that moment when you had first real pizza?
Yeah.
And you go, what?
I've been eating pizza,
but like you're like, oh, I didn't know that pizza could be this.
Yeah, my experience was Lil Frankie's. That was like my first time having...
Shout out.
Proper wood-fired pizza. Yeah, yeah.
And so knowing that Charleston was not going to be where the roots were going to go deep down. When did you start looking to move, and how did you, since you had a mobile business, decide what city to go to? Because by this time, it's 2016, 2017, like pizza has now become what pizza is, which is a lot of people just have artisanal Neapolitan pizza places. How did you pick the market? What did you think that you wanted?
I think that in leaving Charleston, we were just kind of like, to be honest, we were thinking more about ourselves and our own happiness than our business to begin with, just because the beauty of pizza is that it can go anywhere. And I think we've just always had a lot of faith in what we're doing and the restaurant we hope to open someday. And I think we actually said to each other, we're like, I think confidently, you know, this concept that we want to do would be okay in most cities. So where do we want to live?
Right.
So we started with that. And then I think we did a trip. We did Austin, San Francisco, and LA.
Yeah.
A couple years ago. And we were like, let's just hit all those places and see, you know, like where do we want to be? And we'd been to all of them already. But we're like, let's approach it like we could potentially move here, because that's something we didn't do.
Right.
On the other end of the spectrum.
And so how did LA went out? Because arguably, I mean, you've been here for a year and a half, but pizza a year and a half ago, there were places popping up, but it wasn't really a thing. Did you just see an opening?
Yeah, I mean, we came to eat pizza here on that trip, and we were like, oh my gosh, there's like no pizza really in this city for the size of it, you know?
Yeah, I know. Well, there's pizza.
There's pizza.
There's pizza. Yeah.
There is, but...
Hard stop. There's pizza.
Sure. Yeah. But being ex-New Yorkers, and we're like, okay, this is the second largest city in the U.S. And we're like, it's, you know, it's lacking in terms of that. So that was kind of a cool bit of insight to, you know, what we could bring potentially to the market here. And since we've arrived, like we talked about, I think that's really changing.
Yeah, the pizza scene has really changed. But how did you guys, when you get here, again, not being from here, I assume you had some friends here, something like that.
Yeah.
How did you start to spread the word? Because, you know, the saturation point of just any new restaurant here is crazy.
It took a while. We didn't do our first event for maybe 5 months of living here, and really weren't sure how we were gonna do pop-ups in LA. It was easy in Charleston. You didn't drive as far. You weren't on the 101 or the 405 pulling an oven.
Sorry, Barkley wants to be in the interview bad right now.
But it's just to get any sort of one to write or to even pay attention to you, things like that. I mean, did you at some point, how did you set up that first event? How did you start getting people to talk about the pizza?
We've kind of always taken the organic route, and it's still the way we're going now. I mean, initially that was birthed out of just being a two-person mobile business and not having the financial means to hire a PR company. And now I think we've just kind of decided we want to do it the old-fashioned way, and that's kind of how we started here. And it's all grown word of mouth and from people eating our food and talking about it and hopefully telling a friend. Or, you know, I think the biggest compliment I always say is when someone returns and has like their sister or their brother or their mom or their family, and I'm like, you found something you love and you want to share it with someone you love. And it sounds cheesy, but that's the old fashioned way of, you know, making a restaurant survive. So we're trying, earnestly. And
so you're doing a couple pop-ups a week, and it's full-time for you as well. Are you doing it Salazar? Are you doing it Hail Mary, but what are like the, what would you see in like the next year, 2 years of what you would like to see LaMora Pizza become?
Well,
would like to have a roof over our heads. Yeah.
Does at some point the mobile pop-up brick oven thing, I don't want to say it gets old because...
It gets old.
Yeah. Like, you want to be able to, like, shut the door one night and then come back and shut the door and not have to, like, start over from scratch every day.
Totally. And we want to have a dishwasher that we will pay very well and love and adore, but, like, we don't want to come home with our dishes, you know, at midnight every single night. So, we can't wait for that.
Yeah, there's that list could go on. That there's a lot of things we want in a restaurant.
Zach picks up his orders all over the city. You know, we're transferring.
You'd rather have the deliveries come to you.
I'd love to have a delivery. Exactly. I'd love to have someone make dough with me.
So is it still just a two-person operation?
We have some regular employees that we've been able to retain. But again, I mean, being mobile and, you know, 1 month we can have 20 events, 1 month we could have five. So with that said, it's hard to retain regular employees. But yeah, we've had some faithful people that enjoy sticking around and helping us out. And we've been able to make that work as well. But yeah, for the majority of things, it's just Zach and I.
Awesome. Well, before we go, one last question. Now that LA has so many pizza places, you included as ex-New Yorkers, where are you on the LA-New York pizza, I don't want to say rivalry, but has LA caught up? Where is LA, you know, is can New York see it in its rear view as far as the pizza city?
No, I don't think that.
I don't think New York can be replaced for that.
Yeah.
LA is trying. And we're trying to help, but I don't think New York can be replaced. I don't think that LA will ever get to that point.
No. They need like 100 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's New York and taco trucks. You know, it's never gonna be a destination for that.
No.
Although I hope people travel to eat our pizza.
And I'm sure they will. So if people wanna come and find your pizza, where can they go? How can they find you?
Social media, our website. We try to keep a calendar live. You can call us. You can email us.
Marley's phone number is on the website.
Oh, thanks. but truly it is. Occasionally I'll get a call and someone's just like, hey, are you guys cooking tonight? I'm like, no, sorry. We're with the dog at home. But, you know,
social media,
follow us online.
Instagram. Yeah.
Awesome. We try to keep it up to date. So much. Thank you, Barkley, for hanging out as well.
Yep.
We have a live performance after this next musical break here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
I feel that I This year, Heritage Radio Network is turning 10. For the last decade, we've been committed to bringing listeners around the world the very best in food radio, for free. Our small staff and incredible network of hosts work hard so that listeners can tune in each week to hear the important conversations in food policy, stay on the cutting edge of cocktail culture, and hear the latest updates in food tech. But there is no HRN without the support of listeners like you. Become a member of Heritage Radio Network today and help HRN get a strong start to our second decade. Choose from exclusive member gifts and stay in the loop on discounts to upcoming events. There's no better time to show your support. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and wish HRN a happy birthday.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are sitting at the legendary Danger Bird Record Studios in beautiful Silver Lake. It is t-shirt weather, it is the winter, and that is why the three of us live here. We want to welcome to the show Dev Ray and his buddy Joel. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
Dev, you were born and bred in California, so you've had the right idea from birth of where to live.
Oh, yeah.
How have you grown up here? How have you found the state being here from birth to now has inspired you, your music, your creative process?
That's a good question.
Big guns. Right at the start.
Actually, be honest, for a long time I wanted to live in New York.
Yeah.
I'm actually probably growing up, I listened to a lot of more music from New York than California.
Who'd you listen to? Who's your influence growing up?
Early mid 2000s scene,
Jonathan Fire Eater, Walkman.
Like the Walkman. There's some of those other
yeah,
bands.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Strokes, Interpol.
Strokes, Interpol.
Did you read Meet Me in the Bathroom?
No.
You would like that. Because it's all about that scene.
Also a lot of the Chicago scene, the Chicago 90s, the post rock stuff, Scene Cake, Tortoise,
Joan of Arc.
Not them as much. My friend Martin likes them, though.
Yeah.
And
Captain Jazz?
No, I haven't heard them either.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was just Tortoise, Scene Cake, Wilco, Gastrodil Soul, and that was about it. Jim O'Rourke, that little crew.
You can hear a lot of that type of music influence your music. What do you love about it? What do you pull from it?
I guess a lot of the experimental song structure, some of the jazz stuff. Not that my music really has a lot of jazz in it, but I don't know, that kind of cold weather.
Opposite.
Yeah, exactly. But also UK bands like Stereolab. But I still, now I feel like everything, I almost wanted to move for a while. I want to move to New York. I want to go to London or something. But now I feel like everything, I feel like I'm here now at the right place. I feel if I was to move away now, it just wouldn't make sense. Because everything is happening right now here.
LA, creatively right now, is one of the best places to be in the world.
Yeah.
And it's funny, as a lifelong East Coaster, so I moved here, to have fantasies about cold weather is really funny. Because having experienced it, that music definitely helps, because you're I'll do anything to distract from my wet feet. You still use some of that stuff because you do a lot of bedroom writing. You do sort of a lo-fi approach. What do you like about that minimal setup, at least in starting your songs and getting everything ready?
I guess control, I guess.
Yeah?
Yeah. I usually am comfortable, like, writing by myself. Till recently, though, I've been working on stuff with Andy.
Shout out, Andy.
Shout out.
Always making us sound good.
Yeah. So that's been a challenge, like a fun challenge. I like that, actually.
Writing with others. But what do you love about writing about yourself? How do you get your process going for songs?
Good question. For a while, I was writing songs on guitar, and then I bought this Casio Tone right here. It's Casio Tone 701. I was living in Highland Park about like 3 or 4 years ago. And I bought this, and that kind of changed my whole way of writing. And I got really heavy. I was influenced by bands like Beach House, for instance. And for a while, too, I was going through sort of like a breakup kind of thing. So I just wrote a bunch of songs on this keyboard that were, excuse me, inspired by that.
Now, I know that before you did your solo project, you were in a couple bands, So Many Wizards and Tomimitsu. Tomimitsu.
It's his middle name.
Got it.
Yeah.
And you had this genre called dream punk.
Yes.
Which comes very clear once you hear the name, but I'd never heard dream punk before. So for those who are unfamiliar with it, and you sort of alluded to that in what you were just talking about, but what is dream punk? How is that style different than, I would say, normal punk? And what's the dream part about it?
Good question. Yeah, that was Nima Cazzaroni. That was his project, So Many Wizards. And I joined that band in 2013. And I guess dream punk, I'm pretty sure I don't know, maybe that term was...
It's a good term.
Maybe that was coined before, but I remember him calling the genre dream punk. And it makes sense because if it was just punk, I probably wouldn't have joined the band. Nothing against punk or anything.
No, of course not.
But I just feel like, you know, I wanted to do something a little different,
yeah.
Like I'm a little older. I guess it kind of has the punk energy and like the fun that's associated with punk. And like I said, the high energy, but the vocals, a lot like reverb-drenched vocals that kind of make it a little dreamier, not as fast, a little more mid-tempo, and like bridges that kind of float a little bit. Like
yeah.
It'll be a really high energy, fast, kind of fun song, and then all of a sudden it will kind of just float for a while, like in the bridge.
I love that changing of the tempos. It like makes you stand up and think a little bit.
Yeah, so I guess probably that, like the reverb-drenched vocals and Nima having a very good voice, like a very kind of strong, beautiful voice mixed with reverb guitars make it kind of dreamy.
Awesome. Well, before we get into your solo work and the start of that career, can we hear a song?
Yeah.
What do you want to play for us?
We're going to start with Mermaid.
Awesome. Well, here we go. Dev Ray at Danger Bird Studios here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Space. said hold tight and let go. The moon is shining down on you. I never know.
Mermaids.
Mermaid.
Yeah, stripped down.
Stripped down.
Stripped down mermaid. Yes.
Stripped down mermaid.
That was very... In the middle of the song, I stopped the drum machine and started it, by the way. That was very hard to do.
So, seamless.
Single keys, drum machine.
So, what made the decision, or was there a moment when you decided to get out of the bands and go solo? What was that moment like? Mm-hmm. What's the process like in... What's that conversation like with your fellow bandmates?
That's another good question. I've been playing in bands since like my early 20s. I played drums in a band when I lived out in the desert.
Did you like that?
Mojave
I know guys
desert.
Who started who play on the drums and then are also front guys, love playing on the drums.
Oh, yeah. I love drums. They're actually probably the funnest to play, most fun. Yeah. Yeah, drums are great. So I started with that, and then I moved to L.A., and then I joined a band, and then I joined So Many Wizards, and then I joined Tomimitsu, played drums at Tomimitsu, played bass in So Many Wizards.
Fun.
So, I mean, I've been writing songs since I was like 16, but they've always kind of been the background because I'm always playing, you know, for other people, which is great.
And you would never say, hey guys, I got a song? Or would you defer to the person who started the band?
Usually... I was cool just playing the instruments.
I mean, I don't know how the politics work. I don't know how long you have to be in a band before you're like, I got a song. And then they're just like, cool George and Ringo. Like,
yeah.
You'll get one for royalty.
Yeah. There was one time when I was in the first band called Airplanes out in the desert. And eventually I brought a song in and it was fine. He was cool with it. He was my buddy.
Cool.
Yeah. And with So Many Wizards, that never happened just because... It's all his stuff. He writes so many songs.
All good.
Yeah.
But do you sort of know when you're joining into it with someone else's band that's sort of the unwritten rule that your songs are your songs, but they have no place in time here?
For the most part, okay. Yeah. Which is why eventually after being... I was in So Many Wizards for about like 5 years.
Wow.
Maybe 4 years.
And you're stacking songs, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So eventually I realized... You know what? I'm getting older. I'm in my mid-30s. Don't tell anyone that,
hey,
though.
Being in your mid-30s is a good place to be.
Yeah. You know, I feel like I, like, paid my dues.
Yeah. How do those songs go from bedroom sketches or ideas to something where you go, this is real, this is something I want to share with the world, I'm going to go out and do it?
Mm-hmm. Good question. I don't know. I think it was just a matter of time. I kind of couldn't wait any longer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I realized, you know, I had a good amount of songs, and I wanted them to get heard. So, yeah, I think it was just a matter of time. Just enough time had gone by, and I felt like I was kind of ready.
And you wanted songs.
To be like a front man.
You didn't want to just have a song and be like, I'm going out. And they're like, what's your next song? You're like, I only have one.
Yeah, exactly.
And I noticed a small shift from that dream punk sound to a little bit more of like a synth pop.
Mm-hmm.
Especially your first song, which was a cover of So Excited, definitely was very synthy. Like, mm-hmm. Super synthy, really beautiful. What made you put the synth even more forward, and what made you want to do a cover as your first step out into the world?
It was kind of like the last thing that I thought I would do because I write songs, you know, and I have plenty of songs.
Years of songs, yeah.
Yeah, years of songs. Only the last few years are actually the good songs, though.
Yeah, but you got to write those first few years.
Exactly.
To clear out all that stuff. That's what people don't understand. You got to clear out all those ideas. You got to work stuff and be like, ooh, there was something I liked, and I'm just going to take that one little bit and move it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I feel like I'm kind of a late bloomer, too.
All good.
Yeah. But anyways, oh yeah, so excited.
Yeah.
So I was working at a deli and Gelson's actually.
Shout out.
I would, yeah, exactly.
Great deli.
Another shout out.
Really good sandwiches.
Oh, really good.
Like
yeah.
really good. And
yeah.
good salads.
I made really good sandwiches. But I would come into work and I would always sing songs, and that was one of them I would sing. And for some reason, I would always sing it slowed down. I'm so excited. Almost kind of like just to be funny, but... But then I got this keyboard, this Casio Tone, and I started playing the chords on it. And then I realized, actually, this is a really good chord progression and, like, a really good song.
There's a reason why it was at the top of the charts.
And I wanted to play it slow and, like, not as a joke or not, like, to be ironic, but actually really do it. So I sat down and played it, and I realized, wow, this sounds like a completely different song. And I was working with a buddy at the time I was doing music with who played guitar. And I was surprised he really liked it, so we recorded it. And I don't know, it kind of just felt like the strongest song I had at the time.
Made it your own, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Can we hear it?
Yeah.
All right.
It's our next song. What? How'd that happen?
Look at that. You were there, I was here, now we're here together. All right, well, here is I'm So Excited, Pointer Sisters.
Yes.
Cover by Dev Ray here at Danger Bird on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Still playing round. that's just fine. Let's get excited. We just can't hide it. I'm about to lose control and I think I like it. I'm so excited. I just can't hide it. And I know, I want you, I want you.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thanks.
So after the single, the first single, you wound up hooking up with the Dangerbird Record guys.
Oh, yeah.
Who are very lovely folk.
Oh, yeah.
How'd you join forces? And you're part of the Microdose Singles collection.
Yes.
What is that?
Microdose? It's like a little, I think it's like a little trial thing or something. Like they kind of try out, find band, local bands in the area and give them a shot at putting out a single and having them perform in their backyard. That was awesome.
It's pretty nice. And the first song, Can't Hide?
Yes.
Right? That's the first song you did with them. Was that one of the songs from the archives? Was that a new song? Tell me about that one.
Actually, that was another... That was a song I'd written before in my bedroom. And it was almost like a disco song. It had a weird disco beat. Yeah, it was a really weird disco kind of keyboard song.
Doesn't have to be weird. Just different,
it
right?
It was a little weird.
Okay.
But then, I was in another band called Dr. Fadeaway with my friend Alethea.
That's a good name.
Yeah. Dream Pop, not Dream Punk.
Okay.
Dream Pop.
Right.
She wrote all the songs and played keyboard. And I had this song. And we had an idea to bring it into that band, and we kind of changed it a little bit. The drummer, Sal, had an idea to change the drum beat. Speaking of, Sal plays drums with me now. Joel plays guitar. Joel is in Devray band all the time, and our buddy Alec, but today we're stripped down, just so
little everyone duo.
Knows.
Sunday duo.
Sunday duo, yeah.
I'm down.
Yeah.
Jazz?
It's yeah.
It's when easy. Are those mimosas coming by, Andy?
Yeah.
I believe we ordered a pitcher.
It's easy for Joel and I to get together. We could just, you know, practice real quick.
But so you had an iteration of that song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we had a version of that song already, but then Alethea actually moved to Detroit, so that band kind of fizzled out, unfortunately.
As one does.
Yeah. So then I took the song and recorded it with Sal, actually, with my drummer, and he helped me produce it. So I had, that was kind of like my most produced song I had, and then I had a couple other ones, and I ran into Aaron from Dangerbird.
Hi, Aaron.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shout out.
Shout out. Actually, I met him at yeah. one of the movie nights that they do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was when they were doing it in the studio in Atwater Village.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I just kind of bugged him, and I was like, hey, I like these movie nights you do. These are cool. Just started talking to him, and then I ran into him at Yummy. And he he said, "Hey, you have any music you want to show me?" I said, "Yeah."
Little known fact that the best way to get a Dangerbird record deal is to work at Yummy.
Pretty much.
And stock grocers.
Yeah.
Like, can I help you with something? Yeah. And here's a tape.
Now there's going to be like a line of people like filling out applications.
Classic LA story.
Classic LA story. So now that you have this single out and you have another single out, you're doing your own project. What's the road in front of you? What do you see as doing for solo work as a late bloomer, but with the future wide open?
Yeah. Playing, well, finishing two songs with Andy over there. Another shout out.
Hey, Andy. So many shout outs.
Yeah.
Andy.
Almost done. Almost done with those.
Awesome.
Yeah. You know, kind of new direction. I mean, he's kind of pushed me in directions, different directions where it's not like I couldn't go before, because I like all kind, you know, mm-hmm. I like everything. I like pop and I like slow dream stuff and I like dance music. But anyways, so we're almost done with those, and then kind of, you know, get those out and play more shows. I think I played like a few shows in a row, like four or five in a row after the Dangerbird, after the microdose thing. And then I took a break to record, so I think January 11th, we're going to play at the Hi-Hat.
Awesome. Yeah. It's a good venue.
Yeah, with Crown Plaza, which is another band that Nima from So Many Wizards has. I'm going to stop talking about Nima, okay?
Let me ask.
Enough about him.
How incestual or how overlapping is the LA music scene for those who might not be familiar with it?
It's pretty incestual. I mean, well, Nima has like three bands. I played in one of them. I filled in for two of them before. Mm. Tomimitsu, mm-hmm. That's Martin's band, he played guitar in So Many Wizards. So, there, I mean, that kind of stuff happens all the time. Joel, I think, is in two or three bands, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, so it feels like you're cheating on each other, right? Everyone's cool?
Everyone's cool.
Yeah.
Polyamorous
yeah.
band yeah, scene, if you will.
It's kind of like that here. It's like if you're a decent, you know, enough musician.
And you're a nice guy or girl.
And you're a nice
you gotta
guy
be nice.
Or girl. Exactly. Then, you know, you're going to play in multiple bands.
And so where do you see your music, your future singles fitting inside the LA scene? Where would you like your voice to represent the music here?
Kind of like, what would you say? Kind of the soul, kind of the funky soul nights.
That's where he wants you.
No, I'm kidding. I do like funky soul night.
Who doesn't like funky soul night?
Yeah. It's the best music to dance to. Probably, I don't know, like pop.
It's a big weird pop scene that
yeah.
fit into nicely.
Yeah. It's a good question. Definitely not like the garage rock scene.
Mm.
That's a cool scene. I feel like So Many Wizards kind of put more of that scene. I guess I kind of look at myself as more like kind of singer-songwriter, but more like experimental pop kind of area. What would you say, Joel?
I think you're right. Experimental pop. That's
cool. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Cool.
Awesome.
I'm sorry, I'm horrible at like
no, it's fine.
Those things.
It's like describe yourself in 100 words.
Yeah.
Go. Well, I want to thank you, and I want to make sure that we have enough time for one more song. But where can people listen to your music? I know it's up on Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
But where else can people get it, buy it, come Let's check see. Out info for shows?
Yeah, DevRay on Spotify. I think DevRay is on SoundCloud.
Cool.
And Bandcamp.
Shout out to Bandcamp.
Yeah. And
love those guys and girls.
Endeavor Instagram, where, you know, I post videos and photos.
It's Devray 1, right?
Devray 1 Instagram, but yeah.
Number 1?
Yeah.
Not spelled out.
But yeah.
How's your gram game? Good?
It's pretty good,
it
yeah.
Is good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Not too much of it. It's the perfect amount.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like to post fun, you know, like, I like to keep it nice, curate it, kind of.
Nothing is worse than artists posting about themselves and only that.
Yeah. It's
you know,
not just...
I get that it's part promo, but let me get a little piece of your world and your insights. That's
yeah.
not just... Hey guys, another show. Here's me in the bathroom mirror, you know.
So. Totally.
So what's the last song you're going to take us out on?
This song is... Oh, this is Palaces. So this is...
The B-side.
Yes, this was one of the singles for the Dangerbird, for the Microdose.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Dangerbird. Thank you to our food guests. Thank you, Heritage. DevRay, one last song. On Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. We will see you... next week. Have a good one.
One, two, three, four.
Palaces and a falling. down, falling down. The palaces are falling all around, all around you. The palaces are falling, tumbling down, tumbling down. The palaces are falling all around, all around you. The wind blows by, the wind blows by, as the days go by.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.